the chief prosecutor, Brigadier General Mark Martins, and some of the defense attorneys. In my view, each one of these groups of people are doing their level best to work within this process that's been established. And that tension is a healthy tension when it comes to arriving at justice. And so at least my confidence is within the people that I know that are participating in the process and that I believe are doing their level best to see that justice is done, especially in these cases of the 9/11 conspirators. It's my opinion that these criminal prosecutions of the 9/11 conspirators are the most significant criminal prosecutions in the history of the nation.
And the legacy of torture. I mean, we still have there are 166 men still being held at Guantanamo. But the message that went out around the world about the United States.
Well, as far as the detainees that are still being held, the Supreme Court has reaffirmed the customary international law position that they can be held until the end of hostilities. And the Supreme Court has uniformly held that in the cases involving Guantanamo that they have decided in recent years. So that said, they can be held to the end of hostilities. As to the issue of torture, what I would say is a policy that permits that, a policy that allows torture to occur, for lack of a better term, is un-American. And my hope would be that with the issues raised about torture in the past few years, that there will be this robust discussion within this country, both on a political level and on a social level. And like we like to say here in the South, that they can bring some Clorox and sunlight.
Lieutenant Colonel Stuart
Couch,
I want to thank
you
for being with us. And Jess Braven, author of The Terror Courts, Rough Justice at Guantanamo Bay. That does it for our broadcast. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Go to our website at democracynow.org.
And this is WHFR Dearborn. It's time now for our public affairs show, live from Henry Ford Community College. It's the new WHFR Journal. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal, local news and alternative views for Dearborn and the surrounding area. Hi, my name is Jay Koronek, and joining me in the studio is our WHFR News Director, Dennis Reimars. Welcome, Dennis.
Hi, how are you?
Okay, how's the driving out there?
Horrible, horrible, horrible.
Okay, but you're coming from some distance away.
Yeah, not that, but I'll tell you what, somebody couldn't negotiate the service drive, and they ended up rolling down the hill onto 96.
Yeah, there was a sudden blizzard this morning, folks, and like nobody was warning you last night before you went to bed.
Right.
And it's pretty much clearing now, I think. I can say that at least on campus. They're shoveling all the walks, and there might be a little sleet, though, that's coming down. It might make it icy by later on today, but it might be warm enough not to be a problem until later this evening. So careful with your driving out there, but you've probably already crashed if you were going to crash, so sorry about that.
That's a good way to put it, I guess.
Well, segues about crashing. On a clear day, Sunday morning, of course, Green Brain Comics and our friend Dan Merritt and his wife, they had a little visitor. In the early morning, a SUV, as it was called, crashed into the side of their building, which is just on the north side of Michigan Avenue in East Dearborn. And it went halfway in. And this is a concrete block wall, so it's like 12 inches thick, and smashed all the way through there. The good news is the driver survived, and a day later, even though there was extensive water damage to the lower level, because when the SUV went through the wall, it ran into and ran over their bathroom on the lower level of the building.
Saved by the bowl.
Yeah, really, because otherwise the SUV would have and the blocks would have completely smashed through the whole facility.
Right.
So, yes. Okay. But our condolences to them. But everybody was safe over there. And I just wanted to say that both Green Brain on the lower level and Stormy Records on the upper level, Wendy and Carl, we know them well, too, here at WHFR, as we know a lot of local people.
Yes, we do,
because that's what the show is all about. Everything is back to business. And they're probably mopping up a little bit, but, you know, check them out. Don't stay away. Maybe you can look at the amazing pictures in this last Wednesday's press and guide.
Those guys will do anything for promotion, won't they?
Yeah. What a way to get press.
Come on, Dan. Boy,
how much do they pay a guy to smash through the block wall, you know, and survive?
I don't know.
I wish the article would have said, but I assume he was wearing a seatbelt and or his airbag went off.
Right.
Because I don't know how he'd survive otherwise.
Those comic books aren't soft.
No, it's the concrete blocks, of course, before that.
Right.
And probably had some health care costs trying to desperately find segue here. By the way, today is February 22nd and 2013, and this is our show for the day. But in the new issue of Time Magazine, supposedly for Monday, March 4th, but it's already online at time.com. Okay. It's amazing because it's like, as Jon Stewart said last night on his Comedy Central cable TV show, The Daily Show, he said it's the first time he's ever had a guest or featured a cover story on his show because he never finds them relevant enough. They're all sort of fluff and,
sure.
You know, didn't used to be that way, but Time Magazine, in fact, I think its fate is sealed now. Time, the organization, is selling all the magazines to another company. And before they were going to do that, they did say that they were going to stop the print edition, that it would be online only.
Like so, Newsweek.
So sure. I don't know when the sale is completed, if that's going to happen or not. But they have, probably for the first time ever, the cover story is about the high cost of healthcare and the mess we're in this country, and it's 36 pages long. Now, if you print it out from the website, it comes out to about 30, or you can just read it there on your computer. Again, time.com. Imagine, you don't have to buy the magazine, which is why they're going broke.
Right.
But you can get the whole story here, and this is an amazing blockbuster. It shows the reason why our health care is so costly in this country and how we don't have the best health care. Now, this is not a criticism, either from me, and all opinions on the show are not necessarily those of anyone here at Henry Ford Community College. Not a criticism from me or Dennis or anyone or even Stephen Brill that wrote the article for Time Magazine of Obamacare. The problem is the health care system we have in place doesn't control costs.
Right.
And that's kind of crazy because other national health systems do control costs as well as provide better care than we do. So, but there's other factors, too, and this is an amazing breakthrough overview article. Jon Stewart said he was so mad and frustrated when he read the details of why we have so much uncontrolled and ridiculous cost as well as profits for the people in our healthcare system.
But only very few at the top is the way I
read
it. Well,
he said, Stephen Brill said, the author, too, he pointed out that in almost every community, and especially in poorer communities, the highest paid CEO, we're always talking about how much the CEO makes, and on average in the USA, a CEO makes 400 times more money per year than the worker.
Sure.
The average worker in the U.S. at the bottom, okay, which is probably below minimum wage, too.
Right.
In most states, some states have higher levels nationally. They said, what the heck, it's not fair here. But anyway, let's leave that issue to the side. So at least, When the question is why. I even have that question. It was pointed out today that, in a positive way on Patch.com, that our superintendent, Brian Winston, that he is the lowest paid of all school districts in Michigan that have 15,000 or more students.
Wow.
And in terms of all superintendents, he's 48th out of all the districts. So even some smaller districts pay their super more.
Right.
Okay, but I even have to ask, and his base pay is $170,000 here in Dearborn, apparently, and then there's benefits. Of course there's benefits, health care and other perks and that. But I really have to ask myself, and as a teacher, I always did this too, why do administrators get two or three times more money? I mean, okay, they do a different job.
Mm-hmm.
Does it take more intelligence? It's not raw intelligence. It's different skills.
Sure.
But are these skills so hard to get? I mean, if you're just a number cruncher, a bean counter, you just count the beans, okay? You count the numbers. That's not rocket science. That's not creative necessarily. Oh, yeah, the best CEOs are very creative, artistic, and they're very involving of all their staff. But still, there's only so many hours in a day for any human being.
Sure.
If you're working to your capacity effectively, are you supposed to get 400 times, on average, more pay than your lowest worker at that plant who's also working the same number of hours and doing an excellent, productive job? You know, the American worker is something like 10 times more productive than they were 20 years ago. They're forced to be more productive, more widgets per hour, more quality.
More efficient.
More efficient.
I would wager that the CEO probably has more input into the salaries and the benefits than the worker at the bottom.
Well, of course they do. And
that's why.
And, of course, their board of trustees say, well, we need a good person, and the other companies are paying a lot, so we've got to keep paying equal to or more to keep this person. But in all due respect, you're not worth that much, folks. Okay, you have skill set, fine. You're worth more, but 400 times more? Or even, all due respect, Brian Winston, our superintendent, you're not being paid equal to what other supers in Michigan and in this area are getting, but are you really worth 2.5 times more? Isn't there, you know, you have different skills, but are they worth 2.5 times more than the best teacher in the district who's working probably as many hours a week, 60 or more hours, because of their own choice in school and out of school to do the best job they can? I put in 60, 70 hours a week. I wasn't paid for all of that. I was also administrator, too, for 10 years at the same time, which I wasn't paid for at all, on top of what I did as a teacher, which was wrong. But nonetheless, I think I was pretty darn good as administrator, cutting the budget, getting more efficient, different skill set, but they didn't pay me a penny more. So, with all due respect, I think, you know, CEOs for healthcare, that's how we started this, get too much money. How is it that all the health care organizations in Michigan, Blue Cross Blue Shield, they all want Obamacare? They all want this to go on. Why? Because the way it's written, the bill is written, they're going to make even more uncontrolled profits for themselves. Okay? And it has nothing to do with quality of health care, even though, yes, more people will have to buy insurance. So insurance companies love it. Oh, we get to sell more policies. Oh, that's wonderful. And so everybody, actually the business people in health, in big pharma, the pharmaceutical companies, and the health insurance companies, they love it.
Right, but Brill seemed to imply, or maybe this is what I took from it, that doctors aren't really making out that great on this as well as you and I as the patients.
No.
Now, finish your thought. You started this with talking about if you go into any community, the CEO of the health care facility
is the highest paid CEO in that town.
He said that flat out. Brill did. And that is really eye-opening.
Right. I mean, he said, well, health is important. Is it quality health? Is it costs that are related? Forget about their salary,
right. But
what about the actual care and the cost of the care? He's pointing out about MRIs, magnetic resonance imaging, which are quite expensive. One hospital, their person that it might be 900, it might be 6,000 or 10,000 or another hospital, same equipment, same unit, no rationale about the difference, and then maybe you only have to pay, say, maybe 200, because your health care coverage gives you a discount.
Right.
Okay. And then, of course, you have to pay maybe your deductible or something. And so you think, oh, I got $9,000. But somebody paid the other $9,000, which is increasing the cost of health care. Where is all that extra money going? It's your money.
Right.
Your money that goes to the insurance company, your money that goes to for the pharmaceutical. It's your taxes going into the system. It is a big mess. It needs to be straightened out. We have legislators that can't even take a positive big step to fixing any of these things. And I'd just like to read you on this. This is the managing editor of Time magazine. It's a quick editorial of this overview. He speaks very succinctly and directly about this story that's in Time magazine. Go to time.com. Read this story, The High Cost of Healthcare by Stephen Brill. It's their cover story, Bitter Pill, Why Are Medical Bills Killing Us? Okay.
It's in the health and family section.
Yeah. For the first time in our history, the editor says, we are devoting the entire feature section of the magazine to a single story by one writer, a powerful examination of Americans' health care costs. The 24,105-word story, reported and written by Stephen Brill, inverts the standard question of who should pay for health care and asks instead, why are we paying so much? Why do we spend nearly 20% of our gross domestic product on health care, twice as much as most other developed countries, which get the same or better health outcomes? Why, Brill asked, does America spend more on health care than the next 10 highest spending countries combined? And why most people that go into bankruptcy go broke?
Yeah.
The majority of those do it because they can't afford to pay their health care costs,
right,
their health bills, their medical bills.
Right.
It's forcing people into poverty. And so you got to read this. You got to talk to people about it. You've got to get your legislators off the dime or get new legislators. And that may take a year or so, folks.
Sure.
But I'm serious about this, both in Michigan and Washington. Washington, you know, they got this whole thing, oh, we're going to sequester, we're going to cut the budget, and they can't have an answer. Again, I'm just referring you to Paul Krugman, NewYorkTimes.com. Read his editorial. He talks about the sequestering, and he says this is a sequester of fools. Okay, he said the right policy, this is today's New York Times, the right policy would be to forget about the whole thing. Forget about the sequestering, okay? America doesn't face a deficit crisis, nor will it face such a crisis anytime soon. Remember, he's a Nobel Prize winning economist, okay? Meanwhile, we have a weak economy that's recovering far too slowly. As you know, in past weeks, I think even last week, he's saying we still need to invest,
right,
from the federal level to keep the country going. And he says that there is a proposal right now in the from the Senate Democrats in Washington, D.C., that is moving in the right direction, replacing the most destructive spending cuts with tax increases on the wealthy and delaying austerity in a way that would protect the economy. House Republicans, of course, want to take everything that's bad about the sequester and make it worse. They want to cancel cuts in the defense budget, which actually does contain a lot of waste and fraud, which is the biggest single budget item in our country. We have a budget that's larger. Talk about health care. Our budget for military is larger than all the other next 47 countries, their military budgets combined. Are we safer? Are we so endangered that we need that? That we need worldwide armies? Get real here. You know, and I pointed out, too, the last new base we opened, Sydney, Australia, because We all know that that's Al-Qaeda's next target, right?
Yeah, they're gonna...
I mean, Sydney, Australia, just R&R for these guys. I've been to Sydney. It's beautiful. It's like a New York City of Australia.
Clean.
You know, we need a military base there. By the way, it's not that close to anywhere else, even in Southeast Asia. I mean, you know, Japan is way in the Northern Hemisphere, and Malaysia and the Philippines, they got their own trouble. Why do we have to open a new base in Sydney? It doesn't make any sense, much less the four or five wars we're currently doing. And the whole drone thing, I don't want to get started on that today. But read the story about the healthcare costs issue. And get informed on that, and then tell your legislators to get off the dime and actually pass bills that go at the core of the problem. Do we have to talk about Detroit? Okay.
Do we have to?
Yeah.
I think
okay.
So.
Well, just briefly, because it affects some taxation issues here in Dearborn. Here, I found this song, this blues song, and it's brand new from James Montgomery. Just a few seconds of this just to set the mood.
Motor City burning. Anything in the world that I can do. The Motor City burning. Anything in the world that I can do. Yeah, the Big D burning down. Down to the ground. They started on 12th Street this morning. I don't know.
Well, you get the idea there. It's kind of a fantasy. It's not burning down, and nothing started on 12th Street. Although maybe James Montgomery there, James Montgomery Band, is referring back to an event that he remembers. But the issue is, of course, according to the Andy Dillon, Michigan State Treasurer's report that went to the governor, Detroit is deeply, 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 deeply in debt, and there's no way out. And it looks pretty definite that even Governor Snyder, it's not really a takeover issue. Somebody's got to straighten this out. In fact, the editorial this week by Tom Watkins, the former education leader here in Michigan, who has editorials in the Press and Guide all the time, it seems, he talks about, too, let's get off the dime and let's fix the mess in Detroit. That was his overview on that. And that means he's in favor of emergency financial manager for Detroit as soon as possible. Please, thank you. And you said, Dennis?
Tim Skubick as well. Yeah. But his thing was everybody's question, how will it all play out? And he really feels that this is the ultimate test for Governor Snyder because how this turns out. I mean, mm-hmm. He's been saying the same things now, following the same plan, and Detroit is the biggest test.
So I have this editorial opinion. It's really a great essay that Jack Lessenberry put in this week's Metro Times, and it basically is about a specific person, John King, who is actually one of our loyal listeners and a supporter of WHFR. Thank you, Mr. King. He runs a used bookstore in Detroit and has got two other locations, too. One is... his main one is at Lafayette Boulevard in the Lodge. You may have seen it if you're driving around. Like it's hard
to miss.
South of Michigan Avenue or something. It's not that far from Michigan Avenue.
I'm going to the when I'm taking the Lodge.
Six story, eight
Cobo.
Story.
It's by Cobo Hall.
Right, and he does have another location that's up in Ferndale.
Mm-hmm.
There's a store on the. It says there's also a satellite store on the fringe of Wayne State's campus,
cool.
Which I haven't been to. But nonetheless, here's the story. It's kind of entertaining. It's about Detroit because that's where John King lives and that's where he's a business person. He says, the night before Mayor Dave Bing gave his latest and possibly last State of the City speech, I went out to dinner with one of Detroit's homegrown cultural icons, John King. King, an authentic natural eccentric. I hope my epitaph is close to that. I'd like to be thought of as an authentic. It's hard to be authentic these days, really.
I will see what I can do.
I model my eccentricity after so many others that it's got, I probably can't be authentic. Anyway, King, an authentic natural eccentric, is the founder, creator, president, and occasional janitor at John K. King Books, the main branch of which inhabits a giant blue building there at Lafayette and Lodge. He says, in the internet age, it defiantly asserts that the printed book isn't going quietly. Hear, hear.
Yeah.
Nothing like a printed book. Especially the good ones.
Yeah. Well, yeah, especially the good ones.
Yeah. Housewives and retirees come here to find something to read at a lower cost, too, because
sure.
they're mostly used books. I guess he does have some new books. I know he has a collection of books that he buys from estates, which are almost brand new, that are, that's a great way to buy, like, leather-bound books and some real deals on books that are almost brand new. And what a selection. Six floors. It's got more, and it's not an ad. Just a simple fact. It's got more books than most libraries.
Right.
Because public libraries can't afford to have books anymore.
That's
so
true.
So he's doing something right in that regard and is to be commended. Talk about recycle, too. Yeah, reuse, recycle. I mean, fantastic. Anyway, so here's to all used booksellers. Okay. But Lessenberry goes on to say, people come from across the nation to look for treasures, artifacts, and autographs, many of which he keeps in a second exquisitely fascinating building. Guarded constantly by two Maltese terriers and a ferocious blue and white parakeet.
Mm. Those parakeets are excellent.
I think I've seen that parakeet, in fact.
Excellent guard animals.
The story chokes me up. Besides providing literary Detroit with some class, King also does his bit to provide a few of those who live in the city with employment. He doesn't hire experts. Finish reading that.
You
middle.
Bet. Yeah. Right in the middle, huh? All right. What'd you say? He doesn't hire experts?
No.
Live in the city of employment. He doesn't hire experts who have studied the rare book business in graduate school. He hires local folks, some of whom have been homeless. And in parentheses, he once hired a hooker in an apparent attempt at rehabilitation. But there's general agreement, especially among the women employees, that this move was a mistake for some not very complex reasons. He hires people and trains them and has created something special down the street from two newspapers that have just announced that they plan to abandon their magnificent and historic Albert Kahn building soon rather than keep it up. King, who looks sort of like a 63-year-old General George Armstrong Custer, might have if he'd avoided Little Bighorn. Also has a satellite store on the fringe, like you'd said. Mm-hmm. All right. He's lived in the city all his life. But basically, the point of this is further on. Do you want me to keep reading? Are you ready?
No, let's just summarize.
This is really interesting and sad, actually.
A few years ago, he built a magnificent little apartment for himself and the lovely Janelle. Girlfriend, wife, whatever,
sure.
Atop one of his buildings. When he went to sign up for cable TV in his bedroom, Detroit, the city that is doing so well, said, "Well, you're a business. You have to pay $3,000. King argued for a while, then told him to, I think this is a technical term, screw it, and put in a satellite dish. So maybe they unscrewed it, in fact, or whatever, to take
unplugged
out the line.
Or whatever.
Because he certainly didn't mean the nasty. No. He's put up with robberies and thieves and cops who don't come for hours after he calls. And then finally, what may be the last straw, blew into his mail in December. The city of Detroit sent him a letter saying, quote, "Our billing system has not billed correctly on your account for fire line charges." They've been charging him about $13 a month for connection to a water line dedicated to dousing fires. So if there's a building fire, you have, the sprinklers
sure.
in the ceiling and hoses somewhere, you know. And,
right.
and so that connection cost him so much. The new rate is $255 a month.
Wow. There's some healthcare CEO involved.
And after the shock, he said, okay, he'll pay it. But then the city sent him a bill for almost $14,000 for back charges they suddenly discovered he owes. And that's in quotes. Oh, so far, he says he's failed to reach anybody to talk to him about this. There's probably nobody left to talk to in the city.
I might wait.
And Janelle told Les and Barry, says, I wish I could just get him to move to San Francisco. Okay. Anyway, as they drove to this restaurant that they ate at on 4th Street, Lessenberry started tallying up the ruins of abandoned and collapsed factories and warehouses, and he lost count after the first couple dozen. John King described it as East Berlin.
Okay.
That's right, circa 1950, except Berlin now has been rebuilt. The next night, remembering our ruins, I heard Mayor Bing painting a picture that it's not all doom and gloom. Every day, there's more signs of hope and possibilities. Well, not on that stretch of 4th Street, Mayor. Not on many streets in many neighborhoods away from fashionable Midtown. As I listened to the State of the City speech, it dawned on me, and this is Jack Lessenberry, what Bing was really saying. This was the report of a good and decent man who tried to tackle a mess too big for anyone to solve. Quote, "There have not been any Payless paydays, no emergency manager to date," he said. "Both are likely coming. There will be lots of right-sizing," quote-unquote, meaning old people losing their pensions and then probably a not very cushioned bankruptcy and all that entails. And then at some point, the city, like General Motors, will be released from higher government control to start over without debts, except with a difference. At the end of their bankruptcy sagas, General Motors and Chrysler had products to sell. What does Detroit have that people will buy? What will Detroit have that will make middle-class families move to the city, refresh it, and start anew? Let's hope we are all happily surprised. And that's in the Metro Times this week from Jack Lessenberry. It actually ends more optimistically than he usually does.
especially in light of the story that, you know, what King's going through. Interesting.
Yeah. And of course, we hope he stays there. I mean, because what he's doing, his business, is a model of what you can do with very little and what's important for society and also for educated people. You got to read those books, folks. You got to keep reading. That's one of the best presents you can give anybody, the gift of reading.
Sure is.
And I'm not just using the old cliche there. But that's the fact, Jack. Okay. What shall we move to next? Segway? Oh, it's too early for Jim Hightower.
Okay.
Let's see here. It's a little bit in terms of the cities. So in this week's Dearborn Times Herald, we knew about this story last week, didn't get to it. And there's a more complete story in this last Wednesday, 2/20/13, Dearborn Times Herald. Various cities, including Dearborn, are suing to keep the Detroit Zoo and the DAA tax collection funds for themselves.
Now, when we first heard this a week ago, I think you echoed the same sentiment I had, which is, well, that's not, you know, Dearborn shouldn't do that. This money goes to the DIA.
We voted collectively in the Tri-County area that we wanted to give this set amount to DIA and the zoo, that passed. So I assumed it would be additional money I would have to pay. That's what I assumed, humble me. And somehow, if you read the full story, and it does get a little complicated, somehow it seems that other cities that already have these special financing districts to help pay for cost of services, special services to businesses, business districts, and we're talking about Taylor and Dearborn and Allen Park and others that are mentioned, six or seven in Wayne County, that you can't collect those funds. That money has to now go to the – it's the same thing. They're saying it's you can't collect that money anymore. You got to give it to the DIA Detroit Zoo. Well, we're already paying that money. I don't understand. I don't – and so really this suit is not as selfishly motivated by the cities. In fact, as Mayor O'Reilly said in his quote in the Times-Herald, it's not really a suit. We just want clarification here.
Right.
That there's something wrong here, and all these cities are going to be out anywhere from $10,000, $20,000 to maybe $100,000. I think Taylor is going to be out $100,000 of their budget, which you're going to have to not use locally but send to the DIA in Detroit Zoo. I don't understand why it has to be one or the other. I just don't understand. I thought when I voted, it didn't say that, oh, we're going to take any taxes you currently voted to pay for special projects in your cities, and now you got to send them to DIA Detroit Zoo. You know, there's no doubt that DIA and Detroit Zoo deserve this money because we voted it in. We said we were going to do it. Well, why is it one or the other? I don't understand. There's so many things I don't understand, and you know, at least, what was it, the quote from Rumsfeld when he was Secretary of Defense, all we can know is what we know. What we don't know is what we don't know. And what we don't know is not something we know, and therefore it can't hurt us. Or I don't know what he said, you know, but it was crazy. He was trying to defend some undefendable military policy, and that's how you triple speak, I guess, in order to get yourself through that day. In any event, let's move to Jim Hightower, because he doesn't triple speak. He's got a couple of great comments for today. One is about asteroids. Oh, they're going to make us money. And the other one is say no to nanos. Here's Jim Hightower, our favorite syndicated populist.
With all the woes that we humans have inflicted on our weary old Earth, from the reckless plundering of her resources to the self-destructive tampering with her climate, perhaps it's time we give her a break. What, you want us to cut back on our fracking, ransacking, scorched earth ways? No, of course not. I merely mean that the good Earth is getting a bit, shall we say, depleted. So, to maintain our insatiable appetite for devouring our own environment, shouldn't we be seeking greener pastures to exploit? Good news, our scientists are already on top of it. At the 221st annual meeting of the American Astronomical Society in January, all the buzz was about drastically ramping up the flow of tax dollars into sky surveys to detect and analyze, quote, near-Earth asteroids. It seems that some 20,000 of these hulking chunks of rock, ice, and who knows what are orbiting around our solar system, yet only 6,000 of them have been identified. The professional sky watchers say that at the current pace of detecting and probing this plethora of asteroids zipping around and at us, not only are we in grave danger of being smacked by some, but we're also missing one heck of an economic opportunity, for there's gold in them thar skies. With dollars in their eyes, several astronomers predict that many asteroids contain rich veins of platinum, cobalt, zinc, and other valuable metals, as well as such essential human needs as oxygen and hydrogen. Let's go get it, is their exuberant cry. First, they demand, fund us and our technological probes to find out what's in each chunk of space stuff, then finance manned missions to harvest the goodies. This is Jim Hightower saying, how fracking wonderful is this? Our expertise at exploitation of natural resources need not be earthbound. We have it within us to mess up the whole cosmos. Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at hightowerlowdown.org. Have you had your minimum daily requirement of nanos today? Nanomaterials, that is, manufactured or natural substances that are broken down in high-tech facilities to be teensy-tiny, molecule-sized particles. Don't look for them on the ingredient list of food packages, because the big corporate processors of our edibles don't want us to know that their goodies include these minuscule, mysterious things that, when ingested, go to places in the body that regular foodstuffs don't directly enter, such as straight into your cells. There's been precious little research on the human health impacts of nanos, though studies have shown them having unpleasant effects on mice. Also, our food regulators have flatly and ominously said they don't have enough information even to evaluate the safety of nanomaterials. So why are they popping up in processed foodstuffs? No one is talking, except a few anonymous food manufacturers who express enthusiasm for the ability for the whatever they are to make processed foods seem creamier and to brighten food colors. A watchdog group called As You Sow sent a survey to 2,500 food manufacturers asking about their use of nanos. A whopping 26 responded, only 14 of which claimed not to use the things. The group ran its own test of 10 varieties of powdered donuts, finding that the sweet concoctions of Hostess Brands and Dunkin' Donuts had products containing a nano called titanium dioxide. What benefit does it offer? It makes white substances brighter. This is Jim Hightower saying, hello. An unknown number of corporate food profiteers are pumping an unknown amount of unknown nanomaterials straight into our cells, having an unknown impact on our health, for no better reason than to enhance the cosmetics of their products. To fight the madness, go to asyousow.org. Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, hightowerlowdown.org.
This is the new WHFR Journal for Friday, February 22nd, 2013. Jay and Dennis with you today. How are you doing out there? Watch your driving, as always, in Michigan winter. Just to follow up on at least one brutal fact that we discovered from the state of Michigan's audit, if you will, Andy Dillon's report, 60% of the landowners in Detroit have not paid their taxes. They're not up to date in their taxes. And how much is owed? Over $250 million.
$260 million.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That blows me away.
Yep. Now, some people are too poor to pay.
Sure.
But, you know, and Dennis said, well, the property...
The values are low.
The values are low. But, you know, it's the assessment of your property value, therefore your taxes, if your property value drops, then you're not paying as much taxes, which is why the city of Detroit hardly has any money coming in.
It's a vicious circle.
And Dearborn and all the other places where property values have dropped. But some people who are still in Detroit... obviously have no money to pay and probably haven't paid for years.
Sure.
That does raise the question, though, isn't anybody collecting back taxes? Isn't anybody, and it's sad, but kicking people out or trying to relocate them or do something to help these people that can't pay their back taxes? Who's in charge of collecting the taxes? Isn't the city of Detroit? Now, again, there are $14 billion of unfunded pensions on into the future. I mean, there's a debt, there's a burden here of $14 billion, as well as the $100 million in their budget that they don't have starting June 1st. So they're technically bankrupt that much. But $260 million haven't paid their property taxes.
No, $260
million
right.
In back, and that's more than half of the landowners, property owners in Detroit. Some of them might be businesses. How big? How small? I don't know. What's the percent in Dearborn, I wonder?
That's interesting.
And who collects that? Who oversees that? Probably it takes years to go through the courts to kick somebody out and claim the land.
3 years defaulting on your and from what I understand, it goes
in your experience.
No, no, but this is a huge industry. Mm-hmm. People will wait till the expiration date, and they will buy the property by paying those back taxes and get it at a very good price.
Oh, that's interesting scam.
And it's not really a scam; it's very legal. But but you're preying on somebody else's inability to pay their taxes.
Now you gave an idea to the other 40% of Detroit.
It goes through courts. It goes through the county. So go to Wayne County if you're interested. You can find out who hasn't paid their taxes.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is that if you're going to lose your house and you can't afford to pay your tax, that's a very desperate situation. You know what I mean?
Well, I would think.
There's a difference between taxes.
If you're not just hoping that they'll take your property away and then you'll just take all your saved up money to buy it back.
Don't do that. That doesn't make any sense.
That's crazy. I don't think that would work anyway.
You're right. There's a whole business of people that buy distressed properties based on paying the taxes.
What about unpaid parking tickets?
Well, did you hear about there's somebody
in
jail?
No, I don't know what the numbers are, but somebody's put in jail for that.
He's going to jail now.
Well, that's another trend I read.
750 of them.
It just sort of fits in here, but all around the country now, certain cities are doing what they used to do in England. They're putting people who are in debt to them, who owe them money, in prison.
Yes.
Debtors' prisons.
Wow.
I thought that idea was so stupid, nobody would do that anymore.
Yeah, ridiculous.
You just want to take the poor people and take them off the streets, but then you want to feed them and house them for $35,000 a year, and then they still, part of that money should go into paying their debt while they're there. But why should the state pay their debt? I mean, it doesn't make any sense. The debtor's prison concept is totally stupid. We don't have it in Detroit, I don't think.
No.
So let's not jump to guns there. But other places in the country, they're actually thinking about, they've actually done that. Well, you owe $10,000 to Jones and you can't pay, so we're going to send you to jail for 2 years. What? What skills are you going to learn in jail? How to make license plates?
Sure, make big rocks into little rocks.
How to be friendly to gay people? Bad joke, but, how to learn how to pick locks or do criminal-type things better? You know, there's all kinds of little skills that pass back and forth, I understand, in prison, as well as making you a really hardened, cruel person, I think, in order to survive, even. So,
right.
What I've said before, and I know it's easy for somebody like myself to pontificate, is that we need some legislators, some administrators that are willing to set up somewhat independent boards and go for the big picture, to deal with the big picture. As I've said here on the show before, Detroit's problems is the problem of the whole region. And I can give you urban planners, and I can show you other parts of the country that have big metro areas like we do. We need a city, Detroit, that maybe goes all the way to Port Huron and Ann Arbor. Ann Arbor says, no, we want to be separate. And all the way down to maybe Monroe or something. What the heck? Let's go down to the border next to Toledo. I mean, we need a regional transit system. We need a water system. We need recycling and waste management. Not little flip-flop, this city's doing that, that county's doing that. They need to all do the same thing, combined resources, police, fire, everything. It needs to be a regional plan.
And they're doing the merging and sharing services to a degree now anyway, and it's very effective.
And hopefully in 3 to 5 years we'll have a regional plan for transportation.
Absolutely.
That was something that was passed. But
yes,
it's got to be the whole enchilada, folks.
Right.
Okay. And what you're going to do in Detroit with all that land, it seems to me you're going to have a reduction of populated areas. You can't have people scattered out
big shift
all over the place.
Absolutely.
And provide them adequate city services and police protection at anything like a reasonable cost. So you're going to have to relocate people in Detroit, I think, to key population centers.
And that is the exact opposite, because obviously people realize that, in fact, something has to be done. What's going on now isn't working. But what you just proposed is the exact opposite of what many people are saying, that they should downsize the city to the point where it's only downtown. You know what I'm saying?
I have to look at where the population centers are, but I'm saying you could have several business areas, maybe corridors along, I mean, businesses are along some of the main highways, like Gratiot going out east and so on. And so you consolidate people to within a mile or two, wherever those population centers are. But the rest of the areas have to be raised, and which means lowered. And R-A-Z-E-D, folks, look it up. And turn them into forest or sell them to people who are going to make farms out of them.
So you're talking about starting over. I mean, literally, that's what it would
the
be.
The only good thing, everybody said, this is great, even an emergency manager would do it, is we have now the commission set up for, what's it called? Destroying these old homes, tearing them down.
Right.
Before there was like 3-4 different groups in the city, like the fire and deciding which buildings to tear down, and so the blight management or blight team, whatever. And they're making a list, they're checking it twice, and they're going to start tearing things down. And they're going to go. Somebody heard on Craig Folly Show, WDET, every morning from 10 a.m. to noon, or in the evenings. What is it? 7 to 9. I think it's 7 to 9 p.m.
Sure.
Yeah, the repeat every day. And remember, you can hear the WHFR Journal repeated all the time after our broadcast from our website, whfr.fm. Just click on the talk show button and then WHFR Journal and pick the date, like the most recent one for this show today. And there we are. But the idea is we've got to clear out these areas. We've got to dig up, like, oil tanks, or, you know, even basements have to be all tore out. If you're going to turn into a farm or whatever, you can't have anything left behind. Mm-hmm. Got to tear it all out. And, of course, I think some of the first reconstruction was done with the help of a couple of big grants from big companies.
Sure.
And God bless them. That's wonderful, because I'm thinking this company might want to come back in and you know, buy some land and do some stuff and hire people and so on. But it has to be all cleared out, like brownfield redevelopment.
Brownfield, that's what I was looking for.
But that's mainly for where you have asbestos and other toxic stuff. But even here, if they do a good job of slowly changing it back to just soil and land, and maybe preserving some of the water lines and power lines, at least put them underground too, by the way, while they're at it, then and they can reclaim Detroit. Again, it's a lot of land, a lot of territory. They just can't keep it spread out. So I think they're going to have to consolidate, and I don't think that means just downtown.
No.
I think it should be pockets, so eventually those pockets grow out and then reconnect again.
But you're talking about creating a lot of jobs just based on the raising alone.
Yeah, but this requires, especially when there's an emergency manager here, the governor of our state and our legislature to get the heck going. And remember, unfortunately, most of the legislators are not elected from the Detroit area.
That's true.
So what do they care? It's not, you know, let us suffer down here. I mean, if they really knew what they were doing, they'd know that Detroit has to be preserved. It has to be reborn. And the final comment I made was, and this was on my Yahoo News, Wednesday morning, they reported nationally a tweet, that's right, one person's tweet, from actress Mia Farrow.
Oh, boy.
Mia Farrow, former, did she ever marry Woody Allen?
I don't think so. I think they lived together.
Yeah, but and she's famous for adopting all kinds of kids, and the oldest of which.
Pretty good actor, too.
Started,
by the way.
Yes, she is. A very good actress. Her oldest started an affair with Woody, and again, he wasn't married to her. And then, that was found out in a big media splash and big to-do. She was like 40 years younger.
Yeah, but she was still of age. That was what.
Yeah, she was legal. She was 21, and so on. And they got married. They're still married.
Are they?
Yeah. There was even a documentary about them. It's weird, but they seem to be doing pretty well.
Was Mia at the
wedding? No. No, she was at the divorce proceedings.
Yes, she was.
Oh boy. Well, divorce?
No, I don't think they were ever married.
There was something.
They lived together.
There was some action against him. She was trying to child molesting her. I don't know. But anyway, here's her tweet. And said, quote, Detroit is near bankrupt. She just read the report on the news, I guess. And that now, quote, now is the time for all good billionaires to come to the aid of our country and invest in USA and our youth. So what do you think about Mia Farrow's Twitter post?
Of course. Don't you want people to invest?
She's implying here that there's some bad billionaires. That's really unfair.
She's also implying that Detroit's worth saving, which I like. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean,
I mean, Warren Buffett might write a check, but he wants some other ones to kick in. You know, Ralph. The title of Ralph Nader's Ralph Nader actually wrote a novel. Our public citizen himself usually writes nonfiction. His last book is 17 Things to Do to Save the Country, and I read it, and it's wonderful, and great ideas, and great, you know, big ideas, and except there's a lot of detail, so I you know, tell people, be careful, it's like 17,000 things to do. Really, there's so much that he's recommending, and it sounds like it really will work, all that stuff. But his last fiction book was called Only the Super Rich Can Save Us, and it was fiction. But he and Mia Farrow, I guess, are praying that a few billionaires will see that they can't exist without a middle class, and to bring the poor people up into the middle class, too. You can't just be a billionaire and have a bunch of robots in your factories and as your servants. It won't work. I mean, haven't you seen that movie? The robots will finally take over. They'll figure out you're stupid and unnecessary. And no, I'm just hallucinating here, folks, on the air. But seriously, we're all in this together, including the billionaires. And why don't they do a little money?
And this is a great investment because everything is so cheap. I mean, when the economy went south, a lot of people from a lot of places, not Michigan, came in and bought some of these foreclosures. So this is a good opportunity. You can buy low and sell high at this point still.
Well, yeah, and obviously any smart billionaire would want to get the most for his money. Bill Gates, richest man or second richest man in the world, depending on how the stock market is on any day. he's set up a foundation with his wife, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation.
Sure.
And carefully they're reviewing applications and ideas and giving money to improve education and healthcare worldwide. Why didn't they just start in the U.S.? But I'm not saying he's not doing his fair share, but there's some, you know, they need some people that have the money behind some big ideas, some real good planning, like Detroit as a whole new super region, you know, and that's money well spent, is to get into the planning stage and just, you know, from the bottom up, redo it. That's what I think.
Because that's what it would be. It would be completely starting over.
So,
you're right.
I mean, it's a little silly and naive for Mia Farrow to... But she's just tweeting, for gosh sakes.
Yeah, hey, we talked about
she's
it.
She's not a genius, but really, the rich have to stand up and get some things to happen. You know, not just for their own personal profits, too. What are you rich for? Just to enjoy it yourself? I would like to think that there was a reason that you're rich that has to do with benefiting society. More directly than what poor people can do, because they don't have the money. Okay. Big news in Dearborn, continuing on here before the end of the hour, 10 minutes until Highway 61 and Joanne Kay gets here. Of course, she may be a little delayed because the roads are a little bad, but we'll have to start on time. Anyway, Chamber of Commerce president resigns in Dearborn. I thought she was really going to keep this job forever. Jennifer Knott Gehring. She really is Gehring, but her middle name is not K-N-O-T-T.
Her
middle name is not.
Interesting. Okay.
K-N-O-T-T, which she sometimes uses.
She's taken on a new position with an organization called Hiring Our Heroes. And apparently that's a veteran employment initiative of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce Foundation. So that's on the national scale. And her resignation is, in fact, effective March 8th. She does, I work for the City of Dearborn Heights television station, and she is part of a show. I always call it The View because it's four females, three regulars, and then they'll have a special guest sit in for every show, and they talk about different things. And for example, they interviewed the young lady who won Miss America from Dearborn. That was one of the shows, and Jennifer Gehring was a staple on that. And it's very interesting, very good on TV, very well spoken, and of course, I saw her again at the Tale of Two Cities. That was the name of the joint State of the City address from both Dearborn and Dearborn Heights. Anyway, she's been doing this, I think, 7 years, 8 years?
Seven years,
and she's moving on to this. But the article on Patch, Dearborn Patch, says that this will not be the end of her work with Dearborn businesses. Under her leadership, the Chamber partnered with the U.S. Chamber in 2012 to bring the new organization, Hiring Our Heroes, a job fair in Dearborn. So she's going to be drawing thousands of people right here in Dearborn. That's going to be actually The second job fair is April 4th at the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center. That's pretty cool.
And finding jobs, this is like for our returning veterans, I assume.
That's exactly.
Something like she mentions 500,000 heroes.
Hiring our heroes, people that are.
Well, that's a lot of heroes.
Yeah.
Boy, I'm glad we have so many heroes in this world.
I am too.
Where are they when we need them? Well, they're fighting in the frontline trenches of countries that there may be no reason to be fighting there. But in any event, that's all noble and well, and we wish her well, of course. I thought actually she might keep the job forever. She seems to be very good at it.
Yes.
Everybody in the chamber seems to get along well with her. Do you know anything behind the scenes? Wasn't it her idea to merge Dearborn and Dearborn Heights?
It was
Chambers?
A big catalyst behind the idea.
But right.
And from all accounts, it's going forward very well.
Did they have a staff? The chamber staff out there originally?
In Dearborn Heights?
Yes.
Yes. Oh, yes.
Where are they now?
They're all part of it together now.
They've all moved into the same building?
In Dearborn, yes.
But Jennifer is still the head of both.
She is. She's the director.
And I bet they didn't give her any extra pay for that.
I don't know. It's called the Dearborn Area Chamber of Commerce now.
She said this is just too good an offer to miss, so they mustn't be paying her anything in the chamber.
I don't know.
And gave her a whole bunch of more responsibilities and...
That's typical. You know, of course, we've interviewed her every year at the Dearborn Farmer and Artisans Market when we do our remote broadcasts.
Right.
And maybe we'll get her for this. I'd like to find out more about this new organization. It's a nonprofit, obviously.
Yeah. They're going to have, I think it's April 4th, they're going to have another job fair here.
That's right.
And so maybe we can bring her in to talk about that
point.
Although, of course, everybody, you know, in business, you're always looking for the next best job. And she's moved a couple times before she got to the Dearborn Chamber of Commerce, always looking for a better job. But after she gets jobs for these 500,000,
well, her work is
it's
done.
All done.
Yeah.
I mean, so it's not like,
hey,
it's going to go on.
Yeah, we live in America. There will be more heroes down the road.
But it's also a point here is that if you get into business or a career, this is for any students who might be listening, you're going to need to be re-educated and redirected every couple of years. It's not just one career and one life.
Nope. Here's your segue.
Okay.
Nice job.
Right. Well, sort of. In the schools, Dearborn schools, you know, there was a request to allow late start, at least at high schools, because the students aren't getting enough sleep. And they did a 18-month study by a special committee of educators and parents last year, but failed to generate enough interest to make the program worthwhile. How could they do an 18-month study last year? it was offered last year after 18-month study.
Okay, got it.
That seems an awful long time to study something.
A year
like
and a half?
Like late start, a year and a half.
It does. It does.
That's a real dysfunctional group of educators.
How long would you give
parents.
Something like that?
Well, that's just crazy.
Six months,
look at the national research, and you should be able to make a decision in 2 days. I'm serious. There's logistical problems in the city.
Right.
I mean, in terms of your buses and the school buildings opening, closing, and janitorial. And I mean, those are the issues to look at. But I think it's already been clear by national studies that later starting schools have students that do better on their tests. And I don't think I'm overstating that, but that's a majority case anyway.
That's probably what they did. They tracked test scores for a year and a half. And that is. It's a little overkill.
So, and according to the district, though, only 24 out of 2,094 eligible students expressed interest in starting school later in 2012-2013. The program excluded those that were required to make up credits in an after-school program, and many students could not provide their own transportation. Oh, you can't start late unless you can take yourself in. You've got to drive yourself in if you want to start late.
Which was one of the whole reasons why school started early in the first place, because kids had...
And Dave Mustonen, who's been on the show, a former student of mine, who's the district spokesperson...
Did he write that?
No, he made the quote. He says, if there's enough interest next time, we'll implement it.
That's
a second try. Currently, Dearborn High School students begin at 7:20 a.m. and are released at 2:15. Middle school students start at 8 and leave at 2:55. And elementary students attend class from 8:40 until 3:35. According to a proposal organized by the district, students electing the late start option for 2013 would start school at 8:25 a.m. and leave at 3:20 p.m. The makeup credit and transportation requirement is still in force. Students ought to be in good academic standing, refrain from taking part in athletics that begin prior to 3:20, and commit to the schedule for the entire year.
That's common sense.
That's why I do it. But what's interesting is the comments, of course.
Always.
After the article on Patch. Without a doubt, high school starts too early in the morning, but having alternative start times will cost the district more money no matter what Whiston says. It's still the parents' responsibility to ensure their child gets enough sleep each day. Many Dearborn parents now let their children work past 10 p.m. on school nights and hang out until midnight. Will starting school an hour later have an impact on these people? I think not, says this person. Parents must take the responsibility in this matter. And we have a couple other comments that say the same thing. And, they shouldn't be. My parents wouldn't allow me to work while I was in high school. I do my homework and I go to bed. And I couldn't even stay up to watch TV past 9 p.m.
Right. When the good shows
and we didn't even have a VCR or DVRs.
You didn't. No. You were the only one in your neighborhood.
In the 1950s, they didn't exist, Dennis. This is pre-computers. I know it's hard to believe.
I can't even imagine.
And pre-VCRs and
you
all that.
You could just TiVo things?
Wow. No TiVo in 1950s.
Where will you be Wednesday at 7 p.m.?
Yes.
27th?
Yes. Let's give a little plug for ourselves, and then I want to plug the Monday Forum also.
All right.
Next Wednesday, Dennis and I, we will be doing a special live broadcast for you, our loyal listener, a live broadcast. Who knows what might happen? It's going to be live.
Yeah.
Somebody could fall down and go boom.
I hope not.
Or misspeak.
Too much paperwork.
Or, get no applause at all. Yes, it's Mayor O'Reilly's annual State of the City address.
Right.
And it's going to be next Wednesday, and that is February 27th. And we will broadcast it to you live. It's supposed to start promptly at 7, so we'll be breaking into our Mountain Stage presentation. Sorry, listeners to Mountain Stage, but that's when this live event is happening. And cover it until the applause dies down, if there's any.
If we can snag somebody walking by some of the...
Right, either before or after. We may go live, actually, maybe around 6:45 or so, if there's anybody who wants to talk to us. We're going to be at the back of the auditorium. But normally, I think last time, there were so many people that wanted to get the heck out of there so fast that we really couldn't do an interview. It was too noisy, at the back. Everybody's pushing and shoving and either going to right or left. This may be the last State of the City address to be done at the old City
Hall.
That's
right. This is in the council chambers.
So that's a historic moment. If you want to attend, I don't think you have to RSVP.
No.
But you got to get there early to get a seat.
That's right.
And I know we're going to get there early, but we may not have a seat anyway. I'll bring my own chair.
Sure.
Okay.
I thought you were bringing like a hammock this time.
Whatever it takes. So we're going to be broadcasting it live here at WHFR.FM. Tell your friends, family, whatever. If you don't get in the door, sit in the car and listen on 89.3 FM. I'm also going to try, Dennis, to put a little digital recorder down on the podium like I often do.
Sure.
And if you cut out all the introductions later, if you edit out the introductions, which are the first 10, 12 minutes, thank you to all the city council members and all the judges. Right. If you cut that out and then you cut out the applause, if any, it's only about a half an hour.
Right.
And I know last year we actually included it on our journal. I guess it was a slow week for news. So I'm not sure if we will do that or not next Friday. It depends on, number one, if the speech happens, number two, if the digital recorder works, and number three, if there's no other breaking news we want to cover. But by all means, tune in if you want to hear Mayor O'Reilly's State of the City address live. It's going to be right here on WHFR 89.3 FM, and you can listen from the website, live stream from the website, too, if you just have an internet connection or via your smartphone.
And I'm sure we'll get our hands on the script like we usually do and be able to look at it.
Yes, and the city has said they're going to have CCTV there. They're not going to do it live over their cable channel, but it will be available as a edited video show within a few days. And the cityofdearborn.org website will have the full text also.
Although
Mayor O'Reilly often goes away from the text.
Yeah, and I was just going to bring this up. Yeah. I just talked about the Tale of Two Cities when both Mayor Dan Pletko from Dearborn Heights and Mayor O'Reilly from Dearborn shared the stage together to give their unique view on things. This was an event sponsored by the Chamber.
Mm-hmm.
The point was that when Mayor O'Reilly got up there, he brought his padfolio with him, and he looked and he said to Mary Laundrieu, she says, I brought this up here because you wrote it. He goes, but I'm not going to open this. He says, I've already scheduled my State of the City address for the end of February. So we were going to get a preview, which we didn't get. So anybody that was there or heard his previous speech, it's going to be supposedly completely different and focused almost entirely just on Dearborn.
And then, folks, if you have any questions about that speech, we have scheduled him to be part of our WHFR Radiothon Week, and we'll have a live interview for a full hour asking your questions, as well as mine and Dennis's and others, about that statement, that State of the City address, as well as other issues that might come up.